Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
An Erio's original.
With anti-Asian hate crimes at record numbers, this season of The Margaret Cho, we're examining the historical crimes that laid the groundwork for this recent onslaught of violence. I talk with Asian comedians, authors, journalists, podcasters, as well as the organizations and people working to stop Asian hate.
Hello, and welcome to The Margaret Cho, Mortal Minority. Today, we're talking about Visha Ratanapakti, the 84-year-old Thai man who was fatally attacked in San Francisco, and Yao Pan Ma, the 61-year-old man who was attacked in East Harlem. Then, we're talking about the bizarre 2005 murders of a little Saigon fortune teller and her daughter, known as the Fortune Teller Murders. Today, my guest is my friend and wonderful stand-up comedian, Robin Tran. Her special, Don't Look at Me, is available to watch on Hulu. Robin, we've been plagued with, problems. So the last time we were going to record, my kitty broke her leg.
Oh, okay. No, I wanted to ask you if everything was
yes,
okay.
Yes, she just got her cast off, and she's much better.
Oh, that's good.
You know, she's deaf, so her balance is... So it's sad, but she's doing a lot better, and... I mean, I'm just such a new cat lady, so I don't really know.
Right. When did you get your cat?
I've had them since the beginning of February.
Oh, okay.
So I have two cats, and I have my dog here. You know my dog. Oh, and so it's just been like this animal house. But how are you? How are you doing? How are you feeling right now with everything?
I'm feeling good.
With everything.
How are you doing? You good?
You know, it's so crazy because every day there's a new outrage in terms of violence against Asian Americans.
Right.
It's like more than once a day, actually. Every hour, it seems like there's a new terrible situation.
Yeah.
It's so insane.
I remember, I've been seeing people talk about it for over a year, mm-hmm. Ever since the... when Trump said, called it the China virus or whatever, my friend's boyfriend got yelled at the Whole Foods in LA. Like, you would think the most liberal place, because he's Asian. And so they think he's responsible for COVID, And so I kept seeing the hate crime stats go up every day and no one was listening. Asian people kept saying, hey, everyone, this is happening. And it felt like no one took it seriously until, horrible shooting happened. And then everyone was like, oh my God, can you guys believe this? We've actually been trying to tell you for a year now.
Yeah,
you know?
That it's happening and that it's escalating, that it's getting worse and worse. And, there is so much to kind of look at. And that's why I wanted to do the podcast that was, directed at these problems and also look at historical cases. Today we'll take a little bit of departure, but I also know that it's a kind of thing of I'm actually afraid. I'm scared to go out. I don't want to deal with it. I can't.
Yeah, no, I'm with you completely. Yeah.
I don't want to be
in it. Like, I don't want to be of it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to have to like defend myself. I don't want to have to like film anything. Like, it's also very hard for me to get, it takes a long time to get my camera out.
Right. Yeah. You're not prepared for whatever is about to happen.
Because it doesn't, it never, my phone never recognizes my face. So I always have to punch in the code. And then I have to like look through my apps to find my camera. And then I'm like, which way is it facing?
Yeah, that's very funny.
It's hard.
No, I actually didn't even want to like leave the house until like October, just like in my brain, because I'm thinking like the hate crimes are going up and just like violence overall is going up because people have been cooped up and there's all this rage, you know, and being transgender and everything. And it's just like, I kind of just want to like not kind of stay indoors. Like, I'm trying to build like a safe space inside of my apartment so that I don't have to leave unless like I have to leave, because it really doesn't feel safe. I remember just even like walking, like when COVID was first beginning and people would give me looks, and that's never happened before, you know, at the supermarket or whatever. So yeah, I just doesn't feel safe out there right now.
No. And it's certainly, you know, on top of the virus and on top of all of the chaos, it's just, it's too much. Like, it's too much to deal with.
Right.
And I don't, I mean, it's like, of course I miss doing comedy. Have you done comedy? You've done like Zoom shows and stuff?
I actually have. I started just making my own videos on TikTok and everything. I learned how to make memes.
Oh yeah.
You know, like little, like I learned how to make memes like a month before COVID started, just cause I just wanted to like learn a new style of comedy. And I actually enjoy it as much as doing stand up.
Oh good.
And so I just kind of like figured out how to be funny in non-stand up ways. Right. And then the pandemic happened and I was like, oh my God, thank God I've been like teaching myself these skills. And so some of my videos went viral on TikTok. So now if I want to do comedy, I'll just do like a TikTok live. I have like 100,000 followers. And
that's amazing. Talk to them,
I'll make short 15-second videos, and I learned how to video edit. And so I've learned how to just do comedy without stand up.
Yes.
So I'm not, I don't have that urge, I think, that people have. Cause I didn't think that we were going to be done with COVID until like 2022. Like, I didn't think that the vaccines were going to, so I was actually just preparing my life, like, without stand-up ever coming back. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I guess I'm not in any rush like most people are.
Yeah, I mean, I did comedy. I did a drive-in show for the first time a couple of weeks ago, which was great. And it felt really good to actually, like, be out there and remember, because I was like, also, like, am I going to remember how to do it? You know, that
right.
It's like, what is it like? And actually, one of the last times I did comedy was with you.
Right. That is, I learned so much that weekend. It was one of the most fun. That was so fun. Yeah. That was the one when I misread your text and thought I was doing one 10-minute set, and then found out the day before I was doing 4 half-hour sets. I don't think I'm ready. I had to like get ready really quick. Yeah. That was really fun. I was just talking about that with somebody.
And it was just like, we didn't know. We didn't have any idea. Like, everything, society was going to change, that it was going to be the last time.
It was January. Yeah, January 11th, I think it was.
It's so weird to think about. Like, it was 2020, but it was a totally different world.
Yeah. Yeah, totally different. You know, not only am I afraid of, like, that I forget how to do comedy, I hung out one time with one friend during the whole year, and it was, like, a socially distanced picnic outside of the apartment complex. Mm-hmm. I forgot how to talk to a person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just kind of felt like I was bombing just talking to another friend, you know? It took, like, 5 minutes for us to get comfortable talking to each other, and we were both like, I haven't talked to another human being in, like, months, you know?
Yeah.
So I wonder how it's going to be. I have my first show back 2 weeks after my vaccination, and I, you know, it's like for like a big, kind of a big show. And I'm like, that's going to be my first setback.
Oh, good.
And I'm like really nervous about it, but you know, it should be good.
It's going to be great. I mean, it's like, I mean, once you're doing it, then you remember, and it sort of like lives in your body. Like that comic personality, the persona, like exists within our like bodily structures. But we can't necessarily recall it unless we're physically in front of an audience.
Yeah. So when you do a drive-through, like, do people like honk when they're when you're doing yeah. well, or can you hear the and laughter?
You can hear them laughing, but mostly like they have. Well, the show that I did was at the Magic Castle, and they had.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was interesting because they had given them like noisemakers, and our crush are like this New Year's Eve like noisemakers.
Oh, cool!
And so that people could sort of react with their windows down and like sort of making noise. So that was helpful.
That's really cool.
It's hard to hear people laughing inside their car.
No, yeah, I was wondering, like, yeah, I don't do people like turn on their headlights and honk. Yeah, I was always wondering that.
There's a bit of that too. So it's yeah. very, it's definitely very different, but it's certain. Certainly something that's necessary and certainly something that I was glad for. You know, there'll be more of it, but it's definitely like it just helped to do it, and it just helped to remember that we're like comedians and we're really like we're here to do that, like that's our job.
Yeah,
so it's really good. And so I wanted to start today and talk about this sort of first the modern subject, two different modern subjects of the hate crimes against Asian Americans. Like these are the ones that are like the most, this one that's not as, this one happened a little bit earlier on, but it was the murder of Visha Ratanapakti, who was in San Francisco. And this one was actually the first one that I remember being completely like, oh, now this is like really terrible. And this was from the New York Times. Weary of being cooped inside during the pandemic, Visha Ratanapakti was impatient for his regular morning walk. He washed his face, put on a baseball cap and a face mask, and told his wife he would have the coffee she had prepared for him when he returned. Then on a brisk and misty Northern California winter morning last month, he stepped outside. An hour later, Mr. Visha, an 84-year-old retired auditor from Thailand, was violently slammed to the ground by a man who charged at him at full speed. So you saw, did you see the video of this? This was a video that was like kind of, it was crazy because it was like just somebody running at this man.
Oh my God.
And so he was just like slammed down to the ground. And so Mr. Visha, who stood 5'6" and weighed 113 pounds, the attack was fatal. He died of a brain hemorrhage in a San Francisco hospital 2 days later.
Oh my God.
And it was captured on a neighbor's security camera. And the video was really, that was everywhere.
Wow.
The assailant was Antoine Watson, a 19-year-old resident of neighboring Daly City, was arrested 2 days after the attack and charged with murder and elder abuse. He pleaded not guilty, but his lawyer admits that his clients had an outburst of rage, which is so... so strange.
What kind of defense is that?
I don't know. But so for months, Mr. Visha had been pining to return to Thailand, but was unable to because of the pandemic. He disliked chilly and wet San Francisco, and he missed his favorite Southern Thai dishes.
Oh,
it's really sad. Like, it's like,
how horrible.
It's if you're like 84.
Yeah.
And you just want to go out for your walk.
I don't understand how that's like a defense. Like, it's so dehumanizing the way they talk about Asian people. Like, it's like, are we not even... Oh, it was remember he had a bad day. The guy that attacked him had a bad... You know,
yeah.
Like, oh, he had a sudden fit of rage. So how does...
It's a similar thing of like, well, they had a bad day. He had a bad day. He was having a bad time.
Right.
I remember this particular attack was the one that really started to get a lot of attention, where there was starting to have people like Asians in Oakland were volunteering to walk elder people where they needed to go, you know, and sort of be like walking around and sort of neighborhood watch for older Asians, which I thought was really great.
That's and really nice.
I thought that was really cool. But that's when I sort of started to see a lot more of pickup around social media around Asian elder abuse. And hate crimes happening against Asians. So the one that just happened a couple of days ago, which was on the 26th, was Yao Pan Ma, who's a 61-year-old man, Chinese man. He had emigrated here about 2 years ago from China. And he was in Harlem, and he was picking up cans and bottles to just, you know, make some money, because he had been in the restaurant industry, and because of the pandemic, he'd been laid off. And so they were just trying to like make ends meet and collecting bottles and cans. And he was stomped by a man, and there's a video of that too. And
oh my God.
So horrible. And so he's actually in the hospital now, pretty much clinging to life.
Oh my God, that's so horrible.
It's just like somebody who's just trying to like get bottles and cans.
Yeah, yeah. And they're defenseless. Like what are they supposed to do in response? Like, there's nothing.
It's so terrible. So they did arrest somebody. There was a video that really went viral. They arrested 49-year-old Jared Powell. People from the community found him for the video that went viral. And he was arrested, and the charges against him were upgraded to attempted murder and assault as a hate crime. Yao Pan Ma is still in a coma. And, the community is really coming together. So the assemblyman Ron Kim said, as New Yorkers, we shouldn't tolerate it. We come here to stay, stop targeting, scapegoating, and killing Asian Americans, which it's like, you know, this is beyond the kind of fear about the pandemic. This is like now going into another arena of like, what does this even mean? Like, why is this happening?
Yeah. But has it been skyrocketing since the pandemic, or is it like?
Yes, it's been. I feel like it's always happened. But because of the pandemic, there have been more instances closer together. And also because of social media that we are, and technology, we're allowed to see video of it.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, I feel like this kind of stuff has been happening. I mean, it has been happening ever since Asians have been here, which pretty much is since the gold rush in 1849.
Right. Yeah, there's always been this otherness with the way Asian people are treated. I always think about like the old whenever I'd watch like a Vietnam War movie, you know, that was made by like an American, and then they would just like show a bunch of like dead Vietnamese people, like, and then they would just show like Tom Cruise being sad, and you're so, poor Tom Cruise, is he okay?
Yeah,
like they just totally disregard the bodies of like you know like the way they treat like bodies of Asian people. It's like, you know, we're like a plot point to like elucidate, you know, a point, you know, where white people are sad about what they've done.
Right.
I learned in college that the way white supremacy works is they look at Asian people as more moral yet less American, and black people as less moral but more American, and then they pit blacks and Asians against each other while white people stay on top. It's a model minority thing. And that kind of blew my mind. It's like, I think no matter what, you know, like what we do in America, we're always going to be seen as like Asian, different. You know, so I think it's like easier to just kind of hurt somebody that just you don't feel like belongs or looks different than you, or, you know, they're not a real person, I think.
Right. It's the dehumanization that sort of gets illuminated by the white savior myth that's kind of in all like movies and TV about people of color that include people of color. It's always white people saving them, whether that's Tom Cruise or whoever it is. You know, it's like white people swooping in and saving the day because they have to see themselves as solving, even though they caused
it. Right. I remember we watched like Platoon in high school, and there was that scene when William Dafoe gets shot, and there's that big dramatic thing in the helicopter. I'm like, I'm way more disturbed by what happened in that village. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, why are we focusing on these like one or two white people? Like, it's the whole thing is about them. And it always bothered me.
Because the underlying premise of the message is that white lives matter and others don't.
Right.
And really, we need to correct that and change that. And I think that society is on its way to doing that. But
I think so too.
We have a long way to go.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a short break. And after the break, I'm going to talk to you about the fortune teller murders.
Oh, okay.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we're back. So do you go to Little Saigon? Do you have a favorite place in Little Saigon, or do you go? I love Little Saigon, by the way.
I lived in Little Saigon for like most of my life. You know, I moved to LA like last year. Like, yeah. I guess like I used to like going to the Asian mall, the Phuc Lip Ta. Like I used to like that a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I miss? I miss like the little bun mi gully, like the sandwich shops and everything. I just miss pho and. I didn't really explore Little Saigon a lot. I just really liked the Vietnamese cuisine. I think that's what I missed the most.
So good. In LA. I love Vietnamese food, and Little Saigon has the best, all of the different kinds of Vietnamese food you can get. Do you have a favorite number pho? There's like a pho, I think it's 79.
54.
Oh, 54.
54.
Is that in the mall?
I don't know. I forgot where it was. I think there were several pho 54s. I never asked anyone what that meant. You know, I don't know what 54 means, if it has any significance.
Well, I know that they all had different numbers. Like there was one in Chinatown in LA that was in the mall, and it was a pho 79, but there was another pho 79 that was in the mall in Little Saigon.
Oh, wow.
That I don't think was connected, but I didn't have an understanding of the numerical value. The pho 79 in the mall in Little Saigon had the largest pho I've ever seen. Like it was like, do you want small, medium, large, or bathtub? This was like bathtub pho. What kind of pho do you like? Which one?
I like pho chicken.
Oh, pho Thai.
It's a pho, yeah. It's like, yeah, pho with chicken, like white meat chicken.
I like the pho with the brisket that's rare.
Yeah, I think most people like that. I think I'm weird. Like I think pho, yeah, it's like there are specific places that specialize in it, but there's not very many.
Yeah. I have to have the Trinity, which to me is the pho and the spring rolls.
Oh yeah.
And the spring rolls and then also the summer rolls. It's the summer rolls that are like in the rice paper. And then the Vietnamese iced coffee.
Yeah, Cafe Soda. Yeah, I really miss the Vietnamese coffee too. The strongest coffee in the world. Stay awake for days. It's so good too.
So good.
Yeah.
It's like a dessert and it's like the condensed milk with the boba. It's kind of like a protein shake in a way. There's so much in it. And so I have to have all three tastes or it's not really complete.
Yeah.
What do you put in your pho?
I put in a lot of hoisin sauce, a little bit of hot sauce, and some lime. I think it's lime. I don't put in any of the bean sprouts.
Oh, the bean sprouts.
Yeah. I didn't start using hot sauce until recently. I think as I'm getting older, I can only enjoy food or it's something with. I'm feeling like a little bit of pain. I don't know why.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what happened. Maybe I'm getting older, but it's like I need a little bit of spice in it.
I need a lot of spice. Like I'll ask for extra jalapenos and I'll put them all in.
Oh my gosh.
With a couple of limes and all of the basil.
Oh.
I don't do the bean sprouts.
I'm getting really hungry. I kind of want to order some pho right
now. I know. But it's so good. It's hard to order it though. Like you have to go get it. Like to me, it's very, because of the way that pho is, like certain kinds of Korean food and Vietnamese food, I have to eat it at the place. I can't. Yeah. Get it like delivered or because there's something about the temperature, it's got to be really hot.
Oh god, I really want to go now.
I know, it's so good.
you know I think I have a weird, like, this doesn't make any sense, but when the pho has a big number, the bigger the number is, the worse I think it's gonna be. Like anything like,
oh, really?
Pho, like pho 2000, I'm like, oh, don't try to be all modern. It's not, I need some old, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But
Pho 2000 is like modern.
Oh my God. It's 2021. I totally forgot, but more modern than, you know, Pho 54.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I'm not sure about the numbers, but I don't know. I think it's really an amazing thing. So anyway, this story.
Okay.
Getting off subject. Cause we got onto Pho. But this story happens in Little Saigon. I watched a TV show called Wicked Attraction, which had a lot of footage of the mall and all the pho places and the little, like, you know, the Little Saigon. And then they also had the Balut place. They had a real quick shot of the Balut place, but that doesn't have anything to do with it. But it was, you know, all of these, and that really made me hungry for pho. So this happened in Little Saigon. And so there was a guy named Young Tran. He was a young man in Little Saigon, and he had had a little bit of a fight with his girlfriend, Anita Vo. And so he brought over coffee and some pastries to her house where she lived with her mom, Jade Smith, hot Jade Smith. And they lived there together. And so he brought over coffee and pastries and just put them outside the house because he was like, you know, maybe she'll like this. And so he went back a little later in the day and the coffee and the pastries were outside untouched. And also one of the mom's bracelets was kind of hanging on the fence of the house. So he's like, that's really weird. So he didn't really know what to think about it. This is April 21st, 2005, by the way. So it was weird. So he called the police to do a welfare check. So the police went over to the house and they looked in the window and they saw that it was like this weird red light and all of these altar stuff, like, you know, because Ha Jade Smith was a very well-known fortune teller. She had like all of these altar things set up, Asian stuff. And they saw what looked like mannequins that were splattered with white paint. And they were like, that's really weird. We don't know what that means. And so they went in the house and they looked and they found Ha Jade Smith, 52, and Anita Vo, 23, dead. And they were stabbed and covered in white paint. Looked like a very violent scene.
Oh, man.
But the bodies were also kind of posed. Like, Ha Jade Smith looked like she was bowing to the altar of this sort of fortune teller thing. And, you know, of course, these, like, policemen didn't really understand what this was. They were like, is this some sort of a ritual murder? What does this mean? Like, what does this mean? And, you know, all of this mystery around her being a fortune teller. She was a very successful fortune teller. Have you been to a fortune teller?
No, I have not.
My family went to a fortune teller. My dad went to a fortune teller in Korea when I was probably about 16 and I just started doing stand-up comedy and he was very concerned about it. So we went to go see the fortune teller that is on by the Tteokbokki Street, which is the Korean rice cake street that is like very, very popular in Seoul. And there's a fortune teller street there. So he went there and the fortune teller told him that I would be an international star in 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
And he was like, okay, then it's fine. That since then he's been totally fine with my career choices and the fortune teller was right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So he totally bought it and believes in fortune telling. I guess in the Vietnamese community in Little Saigon, this woman, Ha Jade Smith, was very, very successful. She would do like, I think she would do a lot of helping people figure out their business.
Right.
And where it should be located. Kind of things like, it sounds like feng shui in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And like rituals to improve like your business. And, you know, to me, it's not that mystical. It's not like she's a witch or anything.
Right, like right. No, yeah. Is it like, it's kind of like a spiritual life coach kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think practical, like there was a lot of practical purposes. Like I feel like fortune teller is used in, at least in Korean culture, as a kind of like practical art form.
Yeah.
And it's almost like interior decorate.
Yeah.
Like somebody's going to come over and say, okay, put this over here, put this over here, put a ticking clock here, put some fish over here.
Yeah. That's really cool.
I mean, that's how they did my house. Yeah. My house is fully feng shui'd, but my house was feng shui'd. We're a little out of date because my house was feng shui'd in like 2004.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to have it like redone.
Right.
Also, if there's a lot of movement in the house, there's different things, but you have it feng shui'd for you and your whoever's living in the house, your significant others, your pets.
all I know about is like mirror placements and stuff, right? With feng shui.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
That's one of the things. And also it's like where you place your bedroom, like where's the most restful place in your house, like where it's good to put different objects of like stone, or where it's good to put like dripping water or motion, or, you know, there's different kinds of things, and there's different kinds of feng shui too.
Oh, okay.
It's so complicated that I was like, I don't even know what to do.
But yeah, but people can help you with that stuff. So that's good. That's a good service.
So I had a feng shui practitioner come over, and she did everything. And we had a little bit of a disagreement about the bedroom of where it should be. And I realized much later that she was really right about it. And so that's remained my bedroom.
Oh, wow. It's like an energy thing.
It's an energy thing. And it's also like where your house is facing compared to like the element that you're born in. Like all of these different aspects of your being are taken into account. So this is one of the things that Ha Jade Smith was known for. And she was very, very successful. Anita Vo, her daughter, wasn't a practitioner. Anita Vo was in law school. So she was going into a different direction, but they were very well off and very well respected in the community. And Ha Jade Smith was, I always think it's so weird that her name is Jade Smith, but she's actually married but divorced.
Oh, okay.
She married a man named Smith, but she didn't, she kept the name.
Gotcha.
So prior to the murder, she had endured a home invasion robbery.
Yeah.
So the police were wondering, maybe this has something to do with it. And the suspects for that particular house invasion were both incarcerated at that time, so it couldn't have been them. They said that a lot of the people in that community didn't believe in banks, so they kept their wealth in their home.
Right. Oh.
Which made them targets for home invasion robberies.
Gotcha. Oh, wow. Oh, that's horrible.
My family would always keep valuable jewelry in socks in a Folgers can.
Oh, wow.
So they were like in the sort of like silk envelopes.
Yeah.
And they're like the silk padded envelopes that like Asian jewelry comes in with like a zipper.
Yeah.
And then they would put them in there, but then they would put them in like dirty old socks.
Oh, wow.
And then put them in the bottom of a Folgers coffee
cake. Oh, so it's kind of like with the butter cookies for sewing, you know, like those.
Yes. Little...
You open up the butter cookies and you get sewing things instead. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I remember my parents gave me like $21 bills, and I was at the store, and I kind of took it out of my pocket and I was counting it, and my mom said, "Don't ever count your money in public. There's some adult looking at you." And so she kind of scared me into like never ever show anyone that you have money. And you're like,
right.
So like, yeah, she was very, she made me very aware of being a target when I was like 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, it's really important, I think. But there's also a very weird truth in like not trusting banks. And in like my family, there was generally that. Although we did have a banking system throughout Korean culture. There's a banking system in like immigrants where they would, it was called the ke, and it was Koreans would pool their money, and you would have one family keep it every month, and it would change hands every month, and you would keep adding to it, and people could borrow off it with interest in order to pay for housing or education or surgery or whatever. There was like a way to do it. But in San Francisco in the 70s, one Korean family stole the cash.
Wow.
And it was a huge scandal because it was like nobody had ever done that.
Right.
Like
right.
Nobody ever had ever stolen the cash. So it was like unheard of because nobody would ever do that. But then the family disappeared for 40 years.
Oh my God.
So we didn't see them. And then my brother said, "Oh my God, the son from that family just Facebook requested."
Oh my God. Oh my God. Wow.
And he was really scared.
What the?
So, but it was really shocking because these banking systems were really for immigrants to use, and you're never going to cross your countryman like that. At least, you know, for Korean immigrants in the 70s. It was just unheard of.
Wow. I don't know. Maybe this is like kind of related, but yeah, my parents always kind of like had a distrust of like banks and stuff like that. But there was always, it extended to other things. Like I always think that I'm going to go to jail if I fill out a form that's wrong. You know, just like any kind of form. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but like if I fill out my taxes wrong, I'm going to go to jail. Even like when I was in elementary school, like if I fill out a permission slip on a field trip wrong, will I go to jail?
Yeah.
And I kind of thought about it a couple weeks ago. Like I kind of almost feel like I'm supposed to be under the radar. I think that my parents were always like, you know, don't get a credit card, don't do this and that. And so like if they find out that I'm using this stuff, they'll try to kick me out of the country. All the fears don't really make sense, but it comes from from wherever my parents had a distrust of like government, or you know, probably because they came from Vietnam, maybe.
So I'm
always constantly paranoid about going to jail because of the distrust.
I know there's a distrust of institutions in the way that like I'm afraid to cut the tag off of like pillows and
right stuff. Like, I know like, what I'm talking about. Yeah, they're gonna come.
Are you I'm gonna cut the tag off of my couch. Like I did a big one and I cut the tag off of my couch and I was like really scared.
It's so weird. I know. I haven't even like when I get a new debit card, you're supposed to peel the sticker off. I don't know why I leave it on. I don't know, like there's something in my brain that thinks I don't belong here, and once they find out I'm here, I'm screwed.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but I get it. And so I understand like how Jade Smith's like thing of like, I'm not gonna put my money in the bank and I'm not gonna do this, but that made her a target.
It did, yeah.
So she ended up getting a lot of, there was one really particularly violent like home invasion where she got tied up and, you know, they stole a lot of her like money and jewelry and just like this heinous thing. But she was able to build it back up. But the police assume, well, this is probably what it was.
Yeah.
What happened.
Wow.
They couldn't figure out anything. They couldn't find any fingerprints, but they did find one of the household knives, the knives that had been in the kitchen from the house from like a butcher block. They found one of them and it had blood on it and fingerprints. So the blood of the victims and fingerprints, but they didn't have the prints in their system. So they didn't know who it was. And they found one small bloody footprint.
Oh my God.
The bathroom. So it was clear that somebody had taken a shower after murdering.
Oh my God.
These people. And then it was a small footprint. So not likely a man.
Wow.
But they weren't sure.
Yeah.
So, and the blood was of the victim. So they really couldn't figure it out. So they just kept trying to see, was it young Tran?
Right.
You know, maybe it was Anita Vo's ex-boyfriend, like maybe he did it, or maybe this is some kind of satanic murder.
Wow.
You know, like because of the, just look ritualistic, and there was all of this like kind of like Asian spiritual stuff that they didn't know, but that was all actually just Jade House.
Oh yeah.
Stuff.
I know, I mean the murders are so horrible, but like I always found it really menacing when like they stuck around with the bodies after they were dead, you know what I mean, like to like take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is like a level of insanity I don't even understand, you know.
Right, it's creepy and crazy and weird, and it's like what does this even mean?
That level of premeditation I think is what is so it's not a person that just decided to do it and left, you know, like they stuck around and showered and then posed the bodies and everything. That's so horrible.
It's so horrible and weird. And so the authorities deduced that it was probably more than one person. The neighborhood was like kind of like they asked questions of people, and the neighbor said that there was a man and a woman that were using the garage door, and they kept coming in and out on the day of the murder.
Oh, wow.
So they had that, and they did a composite drawing of the man and the woman, but it was kind of not, you know, didn't really seem to like be anybody that anybody knew or could be like a suspect.
Right.
They couldn't really find anybody. Wasn't that descriptive. So they just kind of like waited. We didn't really know what to do. So sometime later, they noticed that the credit cards from the murder were like being used. And
oh my God.
It was like really, it was a really strange thing. They were like, what does that mean? And there was like just like small amounts at first, and it was just happening in like North Carolina.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what does that mean? There was like these like really small amounts. And so they just were like, that's so weird. And then they picked up some surveillance video of the people using, somebody using the account, and it was an old Asian woman.
What?
And they're like,
what?
Oh, that's weird.
It is. Yeah, that's weird. It
doesn't look like, they're like, did somebody steal the credit cards? And because what they found in the house is they found that Jade Hot had hidden huge amounts of cash in the dust bag of her vacuum cleaner.
Oh my God.
But the money was like in big old like fat rolls, and so they didn't find it.
Right.
Like $60,000.
Oh my God.
And in the coffee maker, so the same coffee thing, not a coffee can, but in the coffee maker where the grounds are,
yeah,
they found $500,000 worth of jewelry.
Oh wow.
Oh my God. It was all like hidden pretty well.
Yeah.
But the house was like there like the credit cards were taken. That was really the only thing of value,
yeah,
that they could follow the trail.
Wow.
So later they kept tracking the credit cards, and finally the credit cards purchased 4 plane tickets from Atlanta to LA.
Yeah.
And it was under a woman named Tanya Nelson. 4 plane tickets had been purchased under her name. So she came into Los Angeles, and they just surveilled her, and like they're like, she's still, they're like, what does she have to do with this? She's like,
right,
this is sort of weird. So she's also Vietnamese.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Tanya Nelson. She has a white name as well.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. I was like, I thought it was a white person.
So she looks just like me, which is so funny.
Okay.
Her name is Tanya Nelson. She's 45, and she's from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. They apprehended her at a South Coast mall.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Which I think is your neck of the woods, right?
It was in Orange County, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And she had bought some huge, like, purchase at Versace, some, like, really ugly purse.
Oh, wow.
Which I actually like Versace, but it was, like, really ugly.
Yeah.
That's what the police said.
Ugly. The police said that in their report, that it was really ugly?
Yeah, the police said it was, like, a really ugly purse. And when she was arrested, she was totally cold and stone-faced and had no reaction.
What?
To anything.
Oh my God.
And she would not tell them anything, and they really could not get anything out of her. So they kept on trying to like figure it out, and it started to kind of come together that Tanya Nelson had committed the murder.
Oh my God.
And it was all it's so crazy. So Tanya Nelson, like a real psychopath. Okay, so she had been a client of Ha Jade Smith. And she had wanted Ha Jade Smith's advice for everything. She sort of lived and died by whatever Ha Jade Smith told her. So Ha Jade Smith was trying to help Tanya Nelson out. She was having an affair with her husband's younger brother.
Okay.
His name was Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in love with him. She just wanted that dick. She wanted her husband's younger brother so bad. He was also a Vietnamese. And Jess was like super into him and just like couldn't get enough and was following him. Boy tried to get away from her, tried to get married. And she went to his house and like tried to beg him to get back with her and was trying to make Ha Jade Smith like cast a spell. Please cast a love spell on him. And
no.
Ha Jade Smith wouldn't do it. She's like, you know, it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to work out. I think you should stop trying.
Wow.
Be in a relationship with him. Tanya Nelson, which wouldn't give up. She just wanted to be with this guy so bad. And it just didn't work. It just didn't work no matter what she did. And so Tanya Nelson befriended a guy named Philippe Zamora, 55, who was a troubled man. He was a gay man, but he was living as a straight man. So he had kids and he was closeted.
Gotcha.
And Tanya Nelson was like hooking him up with gay guys.
Oh, okay.
So she was his like dick hotline.
Okay.
Helping him get that dick, which I mean, you can get dick on your own.
I was going to say wingman, but I think dick hotline is.
she was like, you know, you got to help me get this guy. So she's like taking him to Loy's house and pistol whipping him to try to get with her. Like,
oh my God.
You want a guy to like you. Don't.
I know.
Closeted gay friend pistol whip him.
I know. People are such like control freaks. Like whatever they want.
Yeah.
They need it. It doesn't matter what the other person wants or needs at all.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. And so Tanya Nelson convinces Philip Zamora that, okay, well, we've just got to get rid of Hajade Smith. And we'll take all of her money because she's super rich. And this is all her fault somehow. So we're going to make sure that, you know, we're going to take revenge. I don't know how what kind of plan this is, but this is like, you know, I'll get you some dick if you help me kill this woman.
Oh my God.
So Tanya Nelson actually makes an appointment to see Hajade Smith as like a reading or something, or just sort of a social engagement. Like it's like, you know, they're still on good terms.
Right,
like,
right.
I know you told me not to get with this guy, but hey, you know, let's just hang out. So she brings Philippe Zamora over there and they have tea and Tanya Nelson's like, hey, why don't you call your daughter? I'd love to see her. So Hajade Smith calls her daughter and is like, hey, you know, Tanya's here. She wants to say hi. We should gonna have some lunch and just come over. Edivo comes over and then Philippe and Tanya just kill him.
Oh my God.
And the paint thing is weird. Like they just, I think they were trying to cover up their tracks somehow.
Yeah.
So they just like threw the paint over the bodies. It's all very unclear. And they really tried to rip the house apart to try to get the money that Tanya wanted. That was the whole point of the murder. But they couldn't find it because it was in the vacuum cleaner bag.
It was in a vacuum cleaner. That's like the most well-hidden jewelry I've ever heard in my life. Oh my God.
Yes.
But then they used the credit cards, right? So like they weren't that savvy, right? Okay.
No, they weren't that savvy because it's like they used the credit cards. They used like little amounts and then more and more and more. And pretty much Tanya Nelson was then convicted of murder.
Yeah.
And was sentenced to death.
Oh, wow.
To me, it's like you never think of like older Asian ladies as being bad.
Right, right, right. No, I know what you're talking about. This is another dehumanization thing. You know, I had a friend who like she downloaded something like illegal on her laptop at work. And, you know, like a song or something. And you're not allowed to take your laptops home. But she, like, took it home and everyone just let her. Like, oh, she's Asian. I'm sure that she's not going to do anything. Like, you know, like, there's, like, this expectation of, like, nothing. You know, like, it's like this, oh, she's, like, not even a person. Like, she's fine.
Yeah. Nothing negative can possibly come from Asian women.
Yes.
Because we're just, I don't know.
I've had
it's like the dehumanization.
I've gone through, like, DUI checkpoints. And, you know, I wasn't drunk, but they would always just, like, let me go. Like they wouldn't even check me. Yeah. Oh, Asian person. Yeah, just go. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just go. No way you're inflicting any harm on anybody, you know?
Yeah.
You know what's kind of like, I was thinking about, you know, Tanya is, you ever have someone who like they get mad at you even though you literally did nothing? Like they created this whole world in their brains and they started connecting things. And then all of a sudden something that happened is your fault. And so I don't know if you've ever gotten like messages from people who like blamed you for something and you've never met this person.
Totally.
You've never met them. Totally. You've never talked to them. I'm starting to get a little bit of that. And I'm like, I literally am just sitting here. And so I think it's like the extreme version of that when someone has created a world in their brain that is so detached from reality.
Weird.
And then they're the victims of everything that the world that they created. So they're the victims of a made-up world. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a kind of, like, it's a mental illness, and it's a little bit of, like, maybe it's a antisocial personality disorder, something like that.
Yeah.
Where it's really, like, you're at odds with the world and kind of make up your own point of view.
Right,
that
right,
has nothing to do with reality.
Yeah.
But this story was really interesting to me because it was, like, I just never thought of like Little Saigon as being a place where something like this would happen. There's something so peaceful and beautiful and delicious about going there. So you
I
never
know.
think of something like this.
And, you know, like, I remember, like, Little Saigon, like, one thing is my mom and I, sometimes we'd go to, like, Banh Mi Gali and get some sandwiches, and people would just say hi to each other. Like, everyone, you know what I mean? Everyone kind of knew each other, and it's like, yeah, it was this, like, sweet little community, this little town.
Something very wholesome about it.
Yeah.
So, those are the fortune teller murders. Wow. Thank you so much for joining me for this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find your TikTok and your Insta, and what's that? What all that is?
I'm RobinTran04 on Twitter and Instagram, and my TikTok is RobinTranComedian. I have like so many videos and memes. I create content like every day. I'm just writing jokes all day and making videos and memes, and it's a good follow, so I recommend it.
I love it. Well, I'm gonna get on it now. Thank you so much, Robin Tran.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoy being with you and talking with you, and I can't wait to see you do comedy again.
Yeah, hopefully we get to work together again soon, doing stand up together.
We will soon, I hope. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
This week we are highlighting Kelly Kai Cab, formerly Cafe Maddie Cab, which is a Bay Area service covering cab rides up to $40 for AAPI people who feel unsafe taking public transportation. Follow them on Instagram at Kelly Kai Cab. You can also donate via Zelle or Venmo, and we will link to their usernames in our show notes.
If you want to support our show, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, and spread the word. Reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts, at Margaret Cho, or at Instagram, at Margaret_Cho. The Margaret Cho is produced by the Irios Network.
Irios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.